Well, some years ago, my husband Jocko and I drove through one of the most unusual landscapes that we'd ever seen. The tiny road showed us distant views of mountains, but on each side of us were fields. And at first, they almost looked desert-like. The vegetation was the color of wet sand. But as we drove, we began to realize where we were. For here and there, deep channels in the yellowish vegetation showed the rich brown of the earth. Cut into perfect rows, it looked, honestly, like chocolate. When we finally came upon humans, we knew for certain what this landscape was. It was a peat bog. And the people who were working the fields weren't planting crops, they were cutting turf. In case you haven't figured it out, Jocko and I were driving in Ireland. To be more specific, we were on the western coast of Ireland near Connemara National Park, which has some of the world's biggest and most productive peat bogs. The folks we saw were doing something people in Ireland have done for generations. They were cutting into the earth to create little peat logs that are used to heat homes throughout the country. While that drive was our first encounter with the bogs of Ireland, we were to see them frequently throughout our many travels there. And the smell of peat burning, which is surprisingly pleasant, was a common scent in most of the towns and villages we passed. I had heard of the practice of making fuel from peat, but I didn't really understand what it meant until I saw the peat bogs being cut in Ireland. In essence, these people have learned to turn mud into fuel. Special mud, for sure, but mud nonetheless. Unlike the mud pies that our children love to play with, these peat logs provide the only source of heat for many, even today. Burning mud. It just seems very strange to me, but there it is. I have always been a fan of mud, although until I went to Ireland, I'd never seen it burned in a fireplace before. As a child, growing up in Northern Virginia, I always loved it when spring came around and we could go out into the fields and woods that surrounded our home and get down and dirty with the earth. My mother started calling me Instant Dirt because I was so prone to find the most likely patch of mud to play in. There is just something very pleasing about mud. Essentially just wet dirt, mud can be shaped into pies. It can ooze through your fingers and toes. It can splash all over you in the rain. And thank you, Donna, for that lovely picture on the front of our order of service. Ask most any child, and they will tell you that mud is fun. Mud is also a critical link in the chain of life. Mud, or perhaps more accurately, soil, is a layer of finely chopped up rocks, humus, which is organic material from dead animals and plants, air, and water. Soil covers most of the landmass of our planet. It's an essential building block in the creation of life. Without soil, plants can't grow, as I told the children. It's a necessary first step in the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. Our seventh Unitarian Universalist principle. While soil, or perhaps what I more colorfully prefer to think of as mud, may be essential in the chain of life, it isn't very pretty. And because it's so ubiquitous, it's easy to forget just how important it is. In fact, mud is pretty darn common. Marge Piercy, in her poem, To Be of Use, that Donna just read, compares the everyday work of human beings, the work that forms the backbone of daily life, to mud. She says, the work of the world is common as mud. It's not pretty, it's not exciting, it's common. But her poem doesn't end there. She reminds her readers that Greek amphoras for wine or oil, Hopi vases that held corn, are put in museums, but you know they were made to be used. We also know that they were made out of clay, which is just one form of dried mud. They are so beautiful that they sit in museums, but they were made out of common mud to be used for common work, feeding the family, watering the garden, storing the goods we use each day. The work of the world is common as mud. And today I would like to suggest that it is not only common, but mud is holy too. The work of the world that mud represents is holy and essential to the life we share together in the church. And I'd like to suggest that when we take the mud of life and transform it through faith into something beautiful and useful, we are doing something wonderful, even miraculous. We are creating a religious community, and that is something common, yes, but holy too. I think I know something about the common holy work that Marge Piercy is talking about. I have been a minister for 35 years, and before that I was a seminarian, and before that I was a preacher's kid. All in Unitarian churches, I want you to know. And during that time, I have learned a whole lot about congregational life. And one important thing I have learned is that congregations are a lot like gardens. They are lovely, yes, but they are also messy and muddy. When I first became a minister, now remember, I was 25 years old, I was full of excitement and energy, like a gardener who spends the winter looking at beautiful pictures of flower beds. I had wonderful images in my mind of the blossoming of the congregation. We would be deeply spiritual. We would provide the most amazing programs for children, youth, adults. We would speak truth to power. We would serve our community in ways no other congregation had before or since. And, of course, because this is what one does when one is young, I dreamed it would be a place where people would always live out of their best selves and never get angry, frustrated, or bored. In essence, I had a vision of perfection in my starry eyes. Now, such visions are not bad things. Like pictures of perfect gardens in magazines, they provide us with ideal images of what can be. The problem is, like that gorgeous garden in the magazine, great congregations have to begin with mud. And what do I mean by this? Well, no gardener can expect perfect roses to bloom in the spring without preparing the soil and getting her hands dirty first. It's easy to look at a garden in full flower in June and forget the muddy months of February and March that came before. And likewise, a church cannot bloom without someone, or many someones, taking the time to prepare the ground. The wonderful blossoms of deep spiritual growth happen because someone was willing to make sure the church ground was fertile enough for such growth to occur. And the muddy tasks that I'm talking about are the daily acts of creating a church and its ministry. Church life doesn't just happen. People like yourselves have to get up early, though thankfully not quite so early this morning, but usually. You have to get up on Sunday. You've got to come here and set up. You've got to practice with the choir. You've got to make coffee. You've got to fold orders of service. Someone also has to create the newsletter, the Facebook page, and the website. Make sure they're up to date and interesting and accurate. Someone has to keep the books, pay the bills. Someone has to plan the Sunday school program, recruit the teachers. Someone has to organize adult programs, and others have to take care of the babies. Someone has to call the committee meetings, chair the board meetings, take minutes. And here's the really good one. Remember what decisions were made. At times, it seems like the work of building and sustaining a congregation is endless, repetitious, and just not much fun. So why is it necessary that we do it? I think it's because the kind of wonderful spiritual growth we want our congregations to provide for their members and for the community around us can't happen unless it has a strong institution undergirding it. That joyful encounter between an adult and child on a Sunday morning in a classroom can't happen unless someone spent an hour on the phone recruiting just that teacher for just that class. The deep connection felt during a pastoral call is less likely to happen if the minister, I have to make sure I get my tenses right here. The deep connection felt during a pastoral call is less likely to occur unless the minister has access to a church directory with the person's name and phone number in it. Trust me, been there. The powerful witness that some of you make on behalf of our faith could never happen if someone didn't make the commitment to learn about the issue, share it with others, and then show up at the city council or the provincial capital. And the church would feel awfully empty, and the things that happen here would never be if someone, and I think this might be you, didn't run the stewardship campaign and make sure there was enough money to pay for professional staff. And those powerful moments of epiphany that occasionally come during a worship service can't happen unless someone has planned and prepared for them, including making sure the door is unlocked, the chairs set up, and the chalice candle trimmed and ready to be lit. And I know that church in a box is a tough one, and y'all are doing a great job with it. Well, this muddy work of creating institutions isn't always sexy, and it isn't always fun, it isn't always exciting, but it is essential, and I think it's holy. I am more and more convinced that developing strong institutions, which are the bearers of our liberal values, is spiritual work. In every community and every time since the beginning of human history, the work of preparing the garden for growth has been essential in the blossoming of meaningful change. Great transformations don't happen unless there are people willing to do the hard and at times unrewarding work of maintaining the health of institutions that matter. It matters that our congregations exist and grow strong. It matters in Toronto, it matters in Chicago, in San Francisco, in Vancouver, and in other great cities. It matters in Comox, BC, in Blaine, Washington, in Auburn, Maine, and in other small communities. And it matters here, in this beautiful place in British Columbia. It matters because the blossoms that grow from our muddy gardens are lovely and meaningful and important and holy. We have something really wonderful to offer the world, an inclusive faith that challenges us to live up to the radical principles that all people have worth and dignity and all life is interdependent. We have a faith that bears witness to the truth of unity and love. Unity and love. Well, this gospel, our good news, can make a huge difference in people's lives. And I know this. I mean, I just heard about it just this morning from Donna and from Sue. Thank you, both of you. I continue to be a witness to this kind of transformation. When people enter into our congregations and discover something here that allows them to blossom and become alive with faith. Let me tell you one particular story of someone I will never forget, who I'll call Mac. Mac came to the church I was serving at the time, broken in spirit, from a difficult relationship and meaningless work. For weeks on end, he came and left, never connecting, only listening. And one Sunday morning, he tentatively asked me, would it be all right if he came to the choir? Well, I said, sure, of course, please. In that circle of musical friends, he blossomed. It turns out he was a very talented musician, and eventually he became a leader in that choir. He worked on his life, and he changed it, so he became happier than he had ever been before. During all the time that this was happening, Mac also spent long hours at the computer making choir schedules and lists, creating musical arrangements, and always asking the church treasurer for more money for music. He served on the music committee, helped out in his son's Sunday school class, and even served ultimately on the committee to call a new minister. The fact that some of his time at church was spent doing routine and less than exciting tasks did not belittle the truth of his experience. His spiritual life blossomed in the muddy soil of everyday life. It mattered that the church was there for him, so he gave himself willingly to support its health and growth. Many of us long for moments of insight, for profound conversations about the meaning of life, for that feeling of soaring grace that makes us know for certain that we are not alone and that our lives matter. All of these things can happen in congregational life. But congregational life can't happen unless the people who create the congregations are willing to dig into the mud and prepare the ground. And surprisingly, it is sometimes when we are digging in the mud that profound connections and transformations occur. I have seen people come alive with faith at meetings, in front of the copy machine, while folding orders of service, and setting up for worship on Sunday. One of the wonders of Unitarian Universalist church life is that the boundaries between the sacred and the secular need not exist. Spiritual encounters can take place anywhere, even in the middle of a mud puddle. I think the metaphor of holy mud doesn't just end in the garden. The soil beneath our feet can be transformed into so many wonderful things. Peat becomes fire, clay becomes ceramic, sod becomes a house. Just so the everyday work of the world can be transformed for us into moments of joy. I have so many wonderful memories of church life that evolve around the daily work that we do together. Whether it's preparing food for the stewardship dinner or making paper chalices with the six-year-olds, whether it's a church cleanup day or the youth group sojourn to help out at a food drive, whether it's the monthly board meeting of the church or the local interfaith group, the simple work we do in our congregations provides the opportunity for growth and connection and even love to take place. In order for a congregation to be the kind of church we want it to be, we have to do the important and essential work of being the church. We have to be friendly and caring and generous and open. We have to be open to new ideas, new people, new growth. We have to do the hard and challenging work of maintaining an institution that will outlast us. We have to dig our hands into the common mud of life, and from that mud, bring forth a garden. When we do these things, then the church reflects what is best in us And it becomes a community where real and wonderful things happen. Healthy congregations are filled with spiritual people who are willing to get their hands dirty. Healthy congregations have people in them like you, people who say yes when asked to teach religious education to our kids, people who agree to serve on committees and task forces, people who serve as board members and as worship leaders, and yes, people who give generously to the stewardship campaign. As you reflect on the many gifts that you have been given and will give to sustain this church you love, may you remember that the hard work of creating a living congregation is like the soil beneath our feet, essential to the life we share. I invite you to be generous in your commitment to this beloved congregation. It deserves all that you are and all that you can give. It provides that wonderful place where you can grow roots to hold you close and wings that will set you free. And that, of course, is part of the text of this wonderful song by Carolyn McDade, written as a prayer that came out of her muddy work in difficult places. She wrote this incredible blessing that all of us love so much to sing. So I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We'll sing Spirit of Life together twice. It's such a wonderful song.